Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome again to another episode of Moments That Rock. I'm your host, Tony Michaelides. We're here every week with 15 to 20 minute segments. And if there's any more from the said interviewee, then we push it back to a few weeks. Today, I'm delighted to have an old friend and colleague, a band I worked with in the early 80s called The Alarm, and especially their leader, Mike Peters, who was a good friend. Years go by, but all of a sudden you pick up the phone, talk to these guys, and it's like they never left. Mike's had an illustrious career, had a lot of setbacks in his time. He'll tell you about them. And he's, what you'd call in modern-day terms, a courageous leader. He's got some great stories, some amazing experiences, and we split this up into several episodes. So without further ado, I'll introduce you to let you hear him introduce himself.
Good day. I'm Mike Peters, the singer of a rock band called The Alarm from Wales in the UK. I have been the said singer since 1981, but also a life in music before that through punk, mod, everything else that was going on in the UK at the time, and been at the creative centre of The Alarm's music for 14 odd years. I'm still here. We've got a new album out called Forwards. I'm a cancer survivor, run a global charity called Love, Hope and Strength, and we just hiked the Alps, and I was speaking at a World Cancer Leaders Summit in Los Angeles in the coming week. So here I am, Mike Peters from The Alarm, Love, Hope, Strength, ready to talk.
I do have the Strength backstage tour past there.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. So we go back 42 years, Mr. Peters, my God.
That's amazing.
Without
amazing.
Sounding like two old blokes talking. Just go back to. I mean, I know the early names of your bands. You know, actually, if I'd have known you then, I would have given you a better name than The Toilets.
The Toilets was came as a flash of inspiration in a pub called the Victoria Hotel in Prestatyn, and I was having a pint with the bass player, and I need to go to the bathroom, and saw the sign, and thought, "That's it, we're going to be called The Toilets." And this was 1977. I'd just seen the Sex Pistols in '76 at the Quaint Ways in Chester before the furor broke out, and saw an incredible band that changed my life, and here I am starting a punk band, trying to persuade people who've never heard of punk and don't know what it is to be in a band, and then we got a few gigs straight away. We were actually probably pretty good, much better than we realised. We had a great singer from Coleraine in Northern Ireland, a singer called O'Malley, who was a proper character, and I met him in a bar in Rhyl. I was supposed to have another lead singer. He never got off the bus. It's a proper transition moment. And then there was no phones to get hold of people and say, "Where are you?" So I carried on with the night out, and Pretty Vacant was playing on the DJ on the dance floor. And I saw this guy pogoing higher than anyone else in the middle of the floor. And I went up to him and asked him if he wanted to be the singer of the band. And he said, yeah. And he was an amazing character. And I went to Liverpool to Eric's Club, which is in Matthew Street, opposite where the Cavern was, where the Beatles started out. And I'd heard that you could have a Saturday afternoon audition gig there. And so I went up one Saturday and just, it was before opening time, and I knocked on the window, and the guy put up the shutter, and it turned out it was a guy called Roger Eagle, who is a very famous Northern Soul DJ on Trop and Erd, run the Twisted Wheel in Manchester, and here he was in a punk club in Liverpool. And I said, oh, I've come to try and get a Saturday afternoon audition for my band. We're from Wales. He says, oh, I haven't seen any punk bands from Wales yet. He goes, what are you called? And I went, we're called the Toilets. And he went, that's a terrible name. You can't play here with a name like that. I said, he said, what's your name? And I said, well, you must have a stage name. And I said, it's Eddie Bopp. And he goes, well, if you call yourselves that, you can play next Saturday. So we did. And we turned up a week late. And as I said that, he said, I said, oh, thanks very much. We'll come back next Saturday. And he started putting a poster up in the window, and it said Secret Gig, The Clash, next Saturday. So I actually bought a ticket off him there and then. So I got ticket number one, which I still have to see the gig, because we played the following Saturday, and we went on stage and we just ripped the venue to bits. And the singer was incredible. He could hold the audience in the palm of his hand. And as we put the last chord down, Bob Geldof jumped on the stage and shook my hand and said that was amazing, because the Boomtown Rats had played the night before. And then Roger Eagle bounded on the stage and said, do you want to play with The Clash tonight? And I was like, what? And I couldn't believe it.
Oh my God.
So that's why I've still got ticket number one, because I didn't have to give him a ticket in, because we played with The Clash that night. And again, it was incredible. And there was another Northern Soul DJ at Eric's at the time, a guy called Chris Harrop, and he was from Baghilt near Flint in North Wales. And he came on the stage. He goes, I want to be your manager and take you to London. And he hooked us up with another famous Northern Soul guy, a guy called A.D. Crowsdale, who runs all the Kent Records, Northern Soul reissues, and probably one of the foremost soul record collectors in Britain. And he let us stay in his flat around the corner from BBC, and they helped us get a gig in the Roxy in Covent Garden in London. And they took us out for a first pint in a pub in London. And before I knew it, I looked around, I thought, where's O'Malley, the singer, gone? The next minute, there was these things called blues going around. I think he did a whole bag full of them and was climbing up the walls. And it became a bit scary at that moment, and sort of frightened me a little bit, to be honest, that the dark side of rock and roll could come into your life that quickly. We hadn't even started. And that was sort of really the beginning of the alarm, to be honest, because we got Nigel Twist, or Nigel Buckle, as he was called at the time, to become the drummer. Although he didn't really like punk rock like we did. He was still a hippie with loons. I used to have to make him wear tight trousers to go on stage and all sorts of things. But yeah, there, heady times being it, but it was formative. And we didn't have what other bands had. When I looked around at the Sex Pistols, I had Malcolm McLaren, and The Clash had Bernie Rhodes, or the Buzzcocks, who I loved, had Richard Boone. They had someone older in their camp who could help them direct the energy and channel it. And we didn't have that. We were just straight out of Rill, and we had no idea. We didn't even know whether our songs were any good. We were just playing off instinct. I hadn't even learned to be a songwriter. I just wrote these 2-minute blasts of music based on what I was hearing and writing about what I could see in front of me. And then I realized when we got in front of an audience, we're actually a really good band with it. And O'Malley died in 2003, and he sort of fell foul to drugs in his life. And that took his energy away and his talent, because he was incredible. I often think back and think, what if he'd been straighter and more channeled it and could have focused his energy better, maybe with someone older around him who could, you know, steer him in the right direction. I often wonder what we could have become as a band from that point onwards without me having to become the singer and learn how to do all the other things that you have to do to create a band. But it was like we were lucky. We started off great. We played with the Buzzcocks. We played with The Fall. We played loads of gigs in the Northwest in the punk scene. But we just didn't. We fell away because we never got to make a demo or a record.
Until was this late 70s, Mike?
Yeah, 77 into 78, yeah. And the bass player, he had a girlfriend called Sarah Sugarman, And she went on to become a big film director in Hollywood and doing things with Lindsay Lohan and Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen and still making big movies now. And in 2004, the Alarm did a sort of punk rock swoop on the music industry, and we created a fake band called the Poppy Fields because we were all now in our 40s. And we pressed the record up and presented it to people as the Poppy Fields. And the industry fell for it, and they started A-listing the song and inviting this young 19-year-old band to be on MTV 120 Minutes. And I was portraying myself as the manager and saying, oh, they're doing their exams. They can't possibly come on TV just yet. and then the record became a big hit, and it was the biggest thing that had happened to us since 68 Guns in the 80s. And when the news of the Subterfuge broke and that this young band were really the Alarm, who were in their 40s in disguise, it became a gigantic news story and got picked up by John H. Williams, who was the producer of the Shrek movies. And he invited me to his production office in Hollywood. And I went and he said, we want to make a film based on the 45 RPM Poppy Fields story. And he said to me, I've got this amazing director in mind. You won't know, but she's having hit movies at the moment. Her name's Sarah Sugarman. I went, well, you'll never believe this, but I went to school with her. And she went out with the bass player of our punk band, The Toilets. And when I met her with Sarah, she couldn't believe it either, that you know, serendipity had brought us to this moment. And she said, okay, I'm going to make the film. It's going to be called Vinyl. We're going to have Phil Daniels, the actor, in it. And Keith Allen's going to be in it. And all these great Perry Benson, great British cast who've been in some brilliant films that were British based. And then she said, I want the soundtrack to be all those songs you wrote for The Toilets back in 1977. So I had one surviving tape of The Toilets, and I took that to the studio and copied the tempos and the speed of the song, so it was pretty authentic, and even recorded them with the same guitar I had from 1977. And we got Phil Daniels involved in the music as the sort of, he did quite a lot of the O'Malley parts, and it's the soundtrack Vinyl's a really great representation of what The Toilet sounded like in 1977.
You're listening to Moments That Rock with me, Tony Michael. And it's today's guest is Mike Peters, the leader of The Alarm, telling you stories about the early days of The Alarm. And we'll be back right after this.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month. So just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
To quote a rock and roll term, you've worked your asses off and everything. You were kind of right place at the right time. But then again, you wouldn't automatically think Wales was the right place. But you always went back and you never left. You didn't. I mean, even the Beatles couldn't wait to move to London and stuff, could they? You always kept your roots. Yeah, but,
well, in Wales, we have a thing called Hiraeth. And it's Hiraeth is an untranslatable word because it's a feeling rather than something specific, and it the closest we can get to describing it is it's like every Welsh person who has the Hiraeth is tied to Wales like an umbilical cord. It means you can never really leave Wales because the Hiraeth is always calling, and it's like it's always elastic band that's pulling you back home. And we're not like the Irish, I think, that get they invade everywhere and take over, and they set up bars and enclaves and live there. With the Wales, we go to these places, but we always come home. We don't leave our mark behind. And they always say the difference between Wales and Ireland, or the Welsh and the Irish, when the Romans invaded Britain, the Irish are the Welsh people that could swim to get away from the Romans, and the Welsh are the ones that couldn't swim, and so we just stayed behind and dug in and held on to our turf.
So really, it wasn't just the time and punk and everything that was your inspiration. It was actually your surroundings as well. I mean, you know, obviously you were energised from being where you wanted to be, not where people probably insisted. You've only really had management in the early days, haven't you? You look after yourself now.
Yeah, we've always looked after ourselves. But, you know, I think that, again, it's a strength and a weakness. You know, when we started the Toilets, we didn't have a Svengali around us to direct around. So I had to go knock on doors and find our gigs and that kind of thing. And even when we moved to London, it was in 1981, we'd had the bands The Toilets that morphed into 17 as a more of a mod power pop band, which is maybe to what we were really leaning towards melodically. And it was when we started The Alarm, I just thought we managed to, this is how The Alarm started in a way. We were in a band called 17, and we'd seen a band from America called The Stray Cats buy airline tickets and just come to London to try and make it. And they did. And they were the hottest thing in the world at the time. And then we did what The Alarm did in 2004. We did it in 1980. We pretended to be a support band to get a gig with the Stray Cats. And I phoned up the band that was supporting them, asked if we could use their drum kit. I phoned the venue and said the Stray Cats had been to see us and wanted to be one of the opening acts, if we could use the support band's drum kit. And they said, yeah, okay, if the Stray Cats want it, that's what's going to happen. And we got as far as to jumping up on the equipment with our guitars before the Stray Cats manager realised that there was another band that he didn't know anything about to play with his group in Crystal Palace. And as he was about to kick us off the stage, Slim Jim Phantom, the drummer, comes out and goes, let them play, they've got this far. What can 20 minutes, what harm can an extra 20 minutes do? So they let us play. We got talking to them and we realised we had something in common. None of us were from London. We were from Wales. They were from America. They'd taken a big risk coming to London and it had worked for them. And they invited us back to, they were recording at a place called Jam Studios with Dave Edmonds, who happened to be from Wales, the great guitarist Dave Edmonds. And when we got to the studio, we all got on fantastically well. And we sat in the room while they recorded Runaway Boys, Rock This Town, all with Dave Edmonds. We sat, watched it all going down. And then they invited us on tour with them. And that was our breeding ground for The Alarm. We learned everything where we were going wrong. And we channeled it ourselves, you know, we didn't have anyone mould us. We just channeled it into ourselves. And Gaz, our old roadie, who became a TV presenter, he, he always said, I sat everyone down one day after the Stray Cats tour and said, right, we're going to remake ourselves. We're going to remodel ourselves, to quote Roxy Music, as the alarm. We're going to be a new entity now. And I had a list, and my list was like something like, we're going to make a single, move to London, get some gigs, find a manager, find an agent, go on tour, get a record deal, make an album, get on Top of the Pops, and then we're going to go to America. And Gaz always said we did everything. The only one thing he got wrong was we went to America before we went on tour in the UK.
Is that before right?
We got on Top of the Pop. Yeah.
How did that happen?
And that's what... We got lucky in 1981. We moved to London with our own single. We had our own flat. There was a guy called Louis Parker who'd come from Rill. He was a bit of a very interesting character in the 70s, and he used to book bands into North Wales, and he used to book them onto the Colwyn Bay Pier, and he'd have things like Jackie Wilson, the Tramps, lot of soul bands that were sort of associated with Northern Soul. And he also opened a nightclub in a hotel in St. Asaph called the Tullardy. And the nightclub was called the Stables. And it was one of the first clubs in Britain to be modelled on American sort of guidelines. So he wouldn't let anyone in who wasn't under, everyone had to be over 21 to get in this club, which was unusual in 1970 Britain, where you could be 18 to get in everywhere. And what he used to, because he owned a hotel and he'd had all these bands play on Colwyn Bay Pier, and then they would stay at the hotel, but they'd have to do a second performance at midnight in his trendy nightclub called the Stables. So obviously I would go there and I saw Jackie Wilson singing there. I saw the Tramps playing. I saw the Shy Lights, so all these kind of American soul bands up close and personal. It was pretty amazing. And then Louis moved into the wider music sphere. He booked us one gig playing with the Slits in 1977 in St. Asaph, which we did. And then he moved to London himself and set up an agency called the Concord Music Agency. And he'd been booking bands like Shack Attack, all these sort of disco bands. And when we got to London in 1981, I called him and asked him if he could try and help us get a gig. And he said, the only band I'm representing that might have anything to do with the Alarm is The Fall with Mark E. Smith. And he said, I can get you a gig with them possibly at the venue in Victoria in London. But he said, they choose the support band. So I'm going to give you their manager, Kay Carroll. I'm going to give you her phone number and you're going to have to phone her yourself and say Louis asked if you could play with The Fall. So I called her from a payphone and said, oh, you know, could we have this gig with The Fall? And she said to me, well, do you sound anything like The Fall? So I thought to myself, well, shall I lie and say, yeah, we sound just like The Fall? Or should I be honest and say, no, we don't sound anything like
The Fall? Nobody sounds like The Fall.
I know, exactly. So I thought, I might as well be honest. I said, no, we don't sound anything like The Fall. And she said, thank God for that. We hate bands that sound like The Fall. You can have a gig.
It's true. Nobody sounds like The Fall. You've been listening to Moments That Rock. I'm your host, Tony Michael Innes, but you've been listening especially to Mr. Mike Peters from The Alarm in part one of his wonderful story, which makes it the end of today's episode. Come back, subscribe, and we'll see you next week with more Moments That Rock.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.